Howdy, howdy.
Hello, everybody.
God, I'm looking up that tequila bottle being like, maybe I'll get into some of that later. It's episode 138. It is July 8th, 2019, and we are going to be talking about John Carpenter.
The filmography of one of the greatest minds in film.
The man, the myth.
Amazing. And he's coming up right now because he is planning an appearance at the Keystone Comic-Con.
He started doing cons recently.
Apparently he was at Texas Frightmare in 2015.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's taking a little hiatus, but he's back on the show road right now. So
awesome. Cool. Well, let's get into it. It is July 8th, 2019, episode 138 of the Scared Dead podcast. And Mr. Gomez will introduce the segment.
First, the old business.
Remember, we had a whole lot of old business last week, so it actually turned into a whole show in the way that these things work. The globe, the universe, the world just... It got all its wiggles out last week because there's not a whole lot this week. But we'll go ahead and do it anyway. This date in 1776, church bells ring after the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. I think right now you'd have a whole bunch of protesters.
Yeah.
And this date in 1889, it's the first appearance of the Wall Street Journal.
Mainstay publication.
Mm-hmm. And this date in 1947, reports of a UFO crashing in Roswell, New Mexico. So that happened on this date. And on this date in 2011, the Space Shuttle Atlantis is launched in the final shuttle mission of the Space Shuttle program. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but the end of the Space Shuttle. I guess after Columbia blew up, like they were losing shot. I mean, you had Challenger and you had Columbia, and they're like, well, too many astronauts dying.
Right.
All right, notable births on this date in 1831. We had John Pemberton was born. He was the guy who invented Coca-Cola.
Okay.
So you know how, like, down here in the South, everything's Coke? Mm-hmm. Like, you want to drink a Dr. Pepper or a Pepsi or whatever, you say, I need a Coke. And then people up north call it Pop, or Cola, or maybe by its name. So somebody posts Facebook, like, let me see where you're from. What do you call this? Like, poison. I call it poison. The things are nasty. If you get off soft drinks for any period of time, whenever you drink one, it really does taste like something you shouldn't put in your body. It's gross. All right. On this date in 1838, the birth of a man named Ferdinand von Zeppelin. Why do you think he may be important?
I don't know.
He's the one that started the Zeppelin Company, which made blimps.
Blimps, yeah. So dangerous blimps with hydrogen in it.
The blimp was named after the man, but the man launched the blimp, and then the blimp launched thousands of little metalheads in the late 60s and 70s. All right, let's see. 1839, John D. Rockefeller was born. 1885, designer Hugo Boss. You know what's interesting about Hugo Boss is he actually designed the Nazi uniforms. Like, he designed the uniforms for Nazi Germany. And yet you can still go to Macy's and buy Hugo Boss stuff. I mean, I guess you can still buy Volkswagen and you can still buy Bear, even though they made the Zylon B. You know. Somebody posted a thing about Monsanto the other day, the chemical company.
Yeah.
The seed company that's, you know. When Bayer bought Monsanto, they decided to absorb the organization. They got to get rid of the Monsanto name because it's got too much bad press. But what that is the company who manufactured and distributed the gas, the cyanide gas that was used in the gas chambers in the Holocaust, has less bad press than Monsanto.
They are a villain for sure.
Oh, certainly. No. I'm just saying. But if I was sitting on a board, I'd be like, well, we do have that whole, like, you know, poison gas thing in our history. All right. In 1908, Nelson Rockefeller was born. So it's just a day for Rockefellers.
Yeah, no joke.
1958, Kevin Bacon was born. The great Kevin Bacon. Friday the 13th, Part 1. He was in Flatliners.
He's in a lot.
Stir of Echoes.
Animal House.
Animal House, certainly. What else? He was in the X-Men First Class. You can't really remember that Kevin Bacon game?
Yeah, 7 degrees of separate of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Run back to Kevin Bacon and six actors.
Tremors is the one that I always remember.
Dude. So many good ones that you don't remember them all. Yep. When you start trying to think of it, you're like, oh, yeah, but...
Gotta cut loose. Yep. Cut loose.
Like that in Avengers. Like, oh, is it still the best movie ever? He's like, there's never was. Tom Holland's like the best Spider-Man. So, have you seen Into the Spider-Verse?
No.
It's good. You should see it. I watched it just a little while, right before you got here.
Yeah.
I missed it in the theaters, but everybody was saying it was really good. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it out.
I stopped following Spider-Man in the comics like years ago because it just got so many titles and so many reboots and so confusing. Mm-hmm. This movie kind of ties it all together and like makes it make sense. So it's fun.
Okay.
Even the Spider-Gwen is not stupid.
Just sorry for the segue, but I just got through re-binge watching several seasons of 24 because it's on Amazon Prime now. There's one season, it is... Just I never realized this the first time I watched it, but like half the cast of RoboCop shows up, including Peter Weller, in this one particular season of 24. It's hilarious, nice. Dude. It's like, I'm like, he was on RoboCop too. It's nice seeing all those old actors pop up in
movies.
I just got through binge watching Blacklist. I don't know if you ever saw that, but it's with, what's his name? James Spader.
Right.
And Carl Weathers popped up. And, you know, all these actors just...
He was in Toy Story 2.
Okay.
It's a very, very small role.
Good.
Like, it's got nothing to do, but, like, you know how, like, in the Toy Story universe, a toy that's separated from its owner, it's a lost toy, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they go to this, like, there's this carnival in town, and there's this park, and there's a bunch just toys around that the kids play with, but they don't belong to anyone. So they're all technically lost. And, there's like these three versions of the same G.I. Joe. And it's like like Action Man or something. And he comes running up and you recognize his voice. He's like Action Man is going to get found today. And he runs off and then the same him in a different outfit. It's like, yeah. And then the guy in the snowsuit, he's like raises up for a high five and nobody high fives him and he just kind of walks off. But it's Carl Weathers. Like, wait, if you stay and watch the credits, there's a lot of really great cameos in that movie. It's fun.
It's always nice to see just some of the actors that we always hold near and dear, just seeing them pop up on stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know.
All right, let's see. Notable deaths on this date in 1822. Percy Bysshe Shelley, the husband of Mary Shelley,
okay,
passed away. He drowned. And in 1994, the second Dick of Bewitched, Dick Sargent, passed away. It never occurred to me how anybody could not realize that those weren't the same, that those guys were not different. Mm-hmm. They don't look anything alike, but apparently a lot of people didn't realize that they were different people. Like, that's bizarre to me. It just, it's weird. But yeah, Dick Sargent. He was a lot less grumpy than Dick York.
Dick York, yeah.
Dick York was always real... Have you seen those old, original Bewitched, like the black and white ones?
It's been a while, but yeah.
They were on, like, MeTV. Mm-hmm. It's kind of noir, the way it's filmed. Like, the sets and everything are really dark.
Right.
And he's always smoking and drinking. It's kind of strange for 19... I mean, it's not strange for a 60s sitcom. It's just strange for such a light-hearted sitcom for what it became. He's like... trying to be the ad exec, and he's sitting in the bar drinking and smoking after hours while his wife's at home. And stuff. Like, trying to deal with the fact that she could give him anything she wants, that he wants, but he doesn't want to earn, like, not earn it or whatever. I would have been like, baby, get to work. Build me the mansion. Let's go. Anyway, that is enough for old business. We're going to take a break real quick and be right back.
All right. Stephen King, John Carpenter, two great masters of terror, have teamed up to take you for a ride.
I knew a guy had a car like that once. He killed himself in it.
Christine, based on the best-selling novel by Stephen King, rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
There we
go. Here we are, Mr. Gomez.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, I found an article recently on the Houston Chronicle's website, which I found interesting. Did you know that the National Museum of Funeral History is in Houston, Texas?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never heard of it, and it sounds like a really, really cool place to go. Hidden in Houston, it was founded in 1992. By a Robert Waltrip. It's a 30,000 square foot, one-story facility on the north side of Houston. That it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I actually reached out to them. Veronica reached out and was like, hey, they might be interested in Scary Dad Year 1. I reached out and I never heard back, but I might reach out to them for Year 3 to come out and maybe do a panel or something.
Okay. Currently, there are 15 permanent exhibits that feature funeral-related topics, including ancient embalming, rituals of Egypt, state funerals, and burials of U.S. presidents. There's a 5,000-square-foot exhibit celebrating the lives and deaths of different popes, a collaboration they made with the Vatican. The collection also includes a full-scale replica of St. John Paul II's original crypt and reproductions of coffins used in funerals of three different popes. And they're about to come up with a Icons in Ash exhibit on July 15th, where new trend right now is to make memorial portraits and paintings using the ashes of the particular person that is the subject of the painting.
Wow.
And they're going to have an exhibit with people and with pets that this gets done with. But yeah, I found that interesting that this huge museum is sitting here in Houston. And
I've never been to it. I've heard of it.
It sounds pretty awesome. Like I said, I'd love to check out the ancient Egyptian exhibit, of course. Just mm-hmm. Mummies are cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, speaking of mummies, I know we talked about already in Russia, a couple of guys were hiking and hunting through the woods when they came upon a bear's den. Inside the bear's den, they found what appeared to be the mummified corpse of a man in the den. And come to find out, he was still alive. That is one of the scariest stories I've read in a while.
Yeah.
Found the man looking like a living corpse, and he was rescued from the bear den, and apparently the animal attacked him, broke his back, dragged him back to the den, and just kept him there for later eating. And he survived a couple of months sitting in this cave with this bear. Can you imagine how scary? Every time the bear comes back, you're thinking it's time.
Oh, yeah.
And your suffering just continues to the point where he was dehydrated. He only had his urine to drink, nothing to eat for 2 months. It's just crazy, dude. The pictures, they released pictures of the guy after they found him, and he looks dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dude, he looks like a mum. He looks like a Walking Dead zombie. He looks like something out of a makeup. He looks worse than something out of a makeup chair.
Right. Yeah. It is just it's horrible, and it's hard to believe what kind of life he's gonna be able to have after this. You know, you got to think you get to a point where you're just hoping the bear just finishes you off.
Well, you remember when we did our Bears versus Sharks episode, mm-hmm. like. When we got into it, like, I was, the whole point, it's like, okay, yeah, sharks are scarier than bears because you don't see the sharks coming. You know they're there. They may be there and, whatever. The bear you see coming right at you. But then all of the, once we figured out those bears were, like, half the time they find the bear and they find the person, their body's cached for later eating.
Yeah.
They've got them stashed in a den or they're sitting under some rocks or something for the bear to take out later. Like, this guy, that happened to him, he just hadn't died yet. Like, that has got to be the most horrific. Like, that dude was going to have nightmares for the rest of his life.
Yes. If I mean, he's got to have suffered brain damage and so many other things that is just horrible story, mm-hmm. man. Okay. The Rocky Horror Picture Show. You might remember the castle that was used in the Rocky Horror Picture Show from 1975. The castle was actually called Oakley Court, and it has been converted into a luxury hotel. Bed and breakfast basically has 9 bedrooms. It's in Bray, England. You can go over and spend the night in the home of Dr. Frankenfurter,
nice.
Which I thought was interesting. And there's a little article that I found about it. Starting August 25th, 2019, they're going to start having a celebration every year called the Time Warp Picnic. For £260, you can secure overnight accommodation at Oakley Court, breakfast, afternoon buffet, and a late night screening of the film. So all those huge fans of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, get on out and check it out.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty neat. Final season of Preacher has released their teasers and a poster, which is pretty exciting. We're finally going to have the conclusion of the Preacher series, which I love the way they did it because, you know, the comic book came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're going to conclude the TV series in the same way, which is pretty damn exciting. So
they're not doing what they did to Swamp Thing.
No, that's a whole other animal that I don't even want to talk about, man. I'm really hoping that somebody picks that up. And just the excuses is just so convoluted. I don't know what the last you heard about it was, but
I heard that the state promised them like $40 million in rebates.
Well, the state came back
and said, no, it's actually 8.
The state came back and actually said, that is a crock of shit because we have a limit on tax incentives. We've had a limit for years. They knew going into it that the limit is $12 million in tax incentives, and that's it. They were banking. The state has no idea where they came up with this number from or why they're saying that this happened, but it has been their policy for years. This is the maximum you can get in tax rebates for filming here. So,
wow.
Yeah, so yeah, the state of North Carolina came back and said, nah, you're not going to slam our name like that. It's impossible for that to have happened because we limit it. You know, you couldn't have been offered that because it just doesn't happen. So,
interesting.
And the thing about it is that the show is, you know, getting great reviews. Everybody's loving it, and it's already done for.
It's
so
insane. It'll be on DVD or something.
Yeah. So they've started announcing the worker for Ghostbusters 3. As you know, Sigourney Weaver is going to be involved in it again. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd. It's going to be directed by Jason Reitman. And they've announced that Paul Rudd will be joining the cast of Ghostbusters 3 as well, which I'm pretty excited about.
I
hope
they can get Rick Moranis back.
No, yeah, he's done. He's not going
to
do anything.
He doesn't like, well, he's retired. He doesn't like to do acting.
Yeah.
But I would like to see, I would like to hope...
Yeah,
that they get Rick Moranis,
at least for a cameo or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Paul Rudd, man. I think he's awesome. I've enjoyed him since his, you know, he was for one season of Reno 911. That's the first place I remember seeing him. he was kind of one of the side characters on that. Paul Rudd's an awesome dude.
Oh yeah,
I think he's a great actor. He makes those Ant-Man movies.
He saved the Avengers.
Yeah,
I mean, well, the Rat did, but forgot what I was
going to say. Okay. Holding to current trends, there's going to be a Hellraiser TV series that's going to begin, which I think that'd be kind of cool, just a continuation of the Hellraiser stories, because all the books by Clive Barker, they go far beyond where the movies have gone, so it'll be interesting to see that back. There's going to be produced by Roy Lee from It and Dan Farrow from Ready Player One. They'll be bringing Hellraiser to the small screen for the first time. As you know, the first movie told the story of Pinhead who came down. He's also going to be in this new series as a one of the characters. They haven't announced yet if they're going to be able to bring Doug Bradley back as Pinhead, but we'll see how that works out. Of course, there is a new guy playing Pinhead in the actual movie series, who actually lives in Dallas. I can't remember his name offhand right now, but I find that interesting to see. Like I said, because the books go so far beyond where the movies have gone. I love horror series now, man.
Yeah, TV shows.
Just Netflix and Amazon Prime have both done so good with, you know, all these stories that I always hope they wouldn't make it into a movie because a movie doesn't allow enough time to tell the story of it. But when you're able to do a three-season television series,
yeah,
you know, that's why I'm still holding on to hope that Clive Barker's Weave World would be perfect for a three-season television series where you could just, you don't miss out on anything.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell the true story.
And that's what they're doing with, Good Omens.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's so full of things that if you cut many things out, then it loses its flavor, so.
Yeah. Okay. A man in England, Michael Slade, age 29, is claiming that... This is an actual news story. Amazon has actually given the guy like 250 pounds of gift certificates to apologize for this happening. But apparently he canceled his Amazon Prime subscription. Okay, but he still had the Echo Dot, which you can use Alexa with. And he asked Alexa to play some music. And Alexa told him, sure, here's your playlist, shithead. And of course, he couldn't figure out why Alexa said that. The expletive was actually beeped by Alexa, so it was, you know, here's your playlist, beep head. And he went to Amazon and said, "I cannot believe this. Alexa just cursed me out. What are you going to do about it?" And instead of Amazon denying it, they actually refunded him some money and gave him. And he's only assuming that it's because he canceled his subscription. And next thing you know, Alexa started calling him names.
That's awesome.
That is pretty awesome, dude. So they've taken his Echo Dot to try to determine if it's been messed with or anything. But yeah, how messed up is that, dude?
That's hilarious. That's awesome, dude.
Okay, finally.
I'm thinking like, you know, it's like rogue employee, like.
Yes, you going to cancel this? Let me do something to you real quick. Okay, finally, a Florida man, Baltazar Gimeno, age 52, went to his bathroom, used the bathroom one Sunday morning, lifted the lid up. 4-foot python jumps up from the toilet and bites him on his arm. How scary is that, dude?
The worst thing about it is, like, he bites, you're getting attacked by a python when you need to go to the bathroom.
To the bathroom, yeah. Like, ah! he says he did not own the snake, has no clue how the reptile slithered into his Coral Springs apartment. He was treated at his home by emergency service workers. The python itself was corralled by animal control officers and taken away. Yeah, this is the snake. This snake was in his toilet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Florida. You heard, like, North Houston, some ladies out working in her yard and saw a snake and freaked out and smacked it on the head with a shovel and it turned out to be a cobra.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, no, it was a hognose. I think it was a hognose snake is what it ended up being, I believe.
I
may have read a different article, but...
No, because, maybe so. No, I think the one that she bashed did turn out to be a cobra.
Okay.
Because I had one out here one time, and I didn't know what it was. My dog was messing with it, and it was long, and it was big. And I was going to scoop him and, like, take him out and fling him somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, elsewhere. But when I got the shovel, I got at him. He rose up and hooded up like that. And I was like, oh, no.
Because a hognose will flatten its head to kind of be like a cobra, but they're so rare to see. It's normally likely you don't see a hognose when you think you see one. So.
Yeah. Well, that one was a hognose. The one I killed was. But he flared up like a cobra at me, and I was like, boom! And then I looked at him later and compared him and was like, oh, that was a hognose.
Yeah.
I'm not taking a chance. You know?
But that's what I got for new business today.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about the man.
Mayday. Mayday. Send the newly folks. This is U.S. Station 31. You read me? Found something in the ice. We need some help down here. Can anybody hear me? We found something. We found something. We found something.
Men have just discovered something. For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside. Where no one can see it. Or hear it. Or feel it.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to, but it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's one.
You guys gonna listen to Gary? He can beat one of those things!
Yes, we are talking John Carpenter.
What you know about him?
What's your favorite John Carpenter film out of all of them? I know it's a very hard ask because I could probably only stop it at two. I don't know if I could pick the one favorite one.
See, that's weird. That's a weird question because one of my all-time favorite horror movies, period, is going to be Halloween. Mm-hmm. And that stands head and shoulders above so many other films. But that was him with no money.
Right. That was his first commercially successful film.
So once you give him a little bit of money, I'm going to have to, I don't know, man. I'm probably going to have to go with The Thing. Because that takes the same skill and storytelling and puts it with special effects.
Yeah.
And because he was able to do with Halloween with a inside-out Shatner mask and just the feeling of dread and fear that he was able to portray with lighting and music and,
right,
you know, mood. It's so masterful.
Mm-hmm.
Then almost nothing beats The Thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. To me, I got to go with two, and I would say... They're not exactly the same genre, but I would go The Thing, just because. The way I'm basing it off of is how many times I've watched his movies, and the ones that I've watched the most would be The Thing and Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
And it just so happens those two have one of my favorite actors,
Kurt Russell. Oh yeah.
Who has worked, as you know, with John Carpenter many, many, many times. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing about John Carpenter is he. He's had so many recurring projects with the same people that, I mean, he knows who he wants to work with because they make the formula that he has.
Yeah, they're
able to achieve what he, his
they vision. Achieve his vision.
Yeah, of what he's looking at. But yeah, you mentioned Halloween. Like I said, Halloween was his first commercial success. Mm-hmm. $300,000 budget. Film grossed more than $65 million, making it one of the most successful independent films of all time. That's big money.
The thing is, a lot of times when you watch horror movies, the first time it'll scare you. The second time, you know where the jumps are. The third time, you're used to it. And maybe it just means a lot to you and you like watching it, but it's not scary anymore. You know, Halloween stays scary.
Yeah.
Like, and same thing with The Thing. Like the autopsy scene. That I know it's coming. I know exactly what's coming.
Yeah,
I mentioned it before.
Yeah.
But it gets me every time.
Right.
And it's just like were we at your house not too long ago and you just had it on in the background and we were just kind of standing there like, oh cool, it's The Thing. And I was like, God, he got me again. We weren't even watching it. It was just on.
Right.
And it's so, I mean, the lighting and the tension and the music and the looks on everybody's faces. I mean, that is a moment in time that was so perfectly captured that you can scare somebody who's a horror fan, like, all the time. Like, that is amazing to me.
And what's funny is he simplifies Halloween. He says, I decided to make a film that I would love to have seen as a kid, full of cheap tricks like a haunted house at a fair where you walk down the corridor and things jump at you. You know, his vision of that, as simplistic as he puts it, you know, think about, you know, Halloween has influenced a lot. You know, mm-hmm. we talked about how James Cameron said when he made Terminator, I want to make Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I want that same type of feel to it. So it, you know, as simplistic as he puts his approach to Halloween, it was a groundbreaking film.
Well, I think the simplistic approach often is the best, especially when it comes to horror, because fear is a basic instinct. You don't have to complicate it.
Right.
And that's what I always find so funny is, and I know we've talked about it before, but, you know, I talked with Ricky at Hell Ming and House of Wax, and just when people sit there and they try to be pretentious about horror, and they're like, oh, I like cerebral horror, I want, you know, this or that, or I want psychological, or like, all of that stuff is cool. Like, Silence of the Lambs, certainly, you know, that's great. But it'll be like, oh, you know, the best movie ever is Halloween, but I don't like jump scares. And you're like, dude, it's like, Halloween is uncomplex.
Yeah.
That's what makes it great.
Keep it simple, stupid.
It is a lot of jump scares. Mm-hmm. You've got four total victims and a couple implied, and music, lights, and jumps.
Yeah.
And dread. And while it's not that simple, it's also not that complex. You know what I mean? And so then whenever you make it too much story behind it, you add some spoilers, you know, you do all of the stuff that the sequels did, then you drop it back into 2018, Halloween, you know, the new Halloween, and it's like you strip all that other stuff away, and it's just Terminator coming at you for no reason.
Right.
They even make a big point in the new movie. Have you seen it yet?
No, not yet.
They make a big point of why. Why are you doing this? What? Like, why? Like, why? And he just never says a word. And he just keeps killing people.
Yeah.
Like, they don't, they strip all that lore about, and it's damn scary. Like,
okay, now, in 1979, he actually had his first collaboration with Kurt Russell. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but it was a made-for-TV movie.
Elvis,
yes. And that's where that relationship started and then took off shortly thereafter. Now, in 1980, after Halloween, he went ahead and did The Fog, which was one of his first collaborations with the great Adrian Barbeau. Mm-hmm. As you know, The Fog is a great movie. It was inspired by horror comics such as Tales from the Crypt and The Crawling Eye, which was a 1958 film about monsters hiding in clouds. I like The Fog. I still enjoy it. It's not, to me, it's not up to that level of Halloween, of course, but it was his, it was a commercial success for Carpenter, and also his budget had increased significantly. For that one, he actually had $1 million budget. So people saw the potential of Carpenter, and is definitely considered a horror classic for sure. After The Fog, that's where we got Escape from New York. The sci-fi film, which
we need to do a fresh eyes on that. I haven't seen.
I watched it about a month ago. It was on one of the UHF stations. I can't remember.
Maybe
which
we should
one.
Do a Carpenter double feature, because I need a fresh eyes. Big Trouble in Little China too.
That would be fun.
So maybe we can do a fresh eyes on those two. Just do a double feature, because God, remember when we talk about sitting and going to the video store and like reading the back of video boxes? I remember reading the looking at the Escape from New York with the big Statue of Liberty head on the cover and just being like, oh, what is this about? This looks so cool.
Now, Escape from New York was a big film. That was one of his, once that started, it was his biggest budgeted film. And just the actors that were in that movie, it's pretty impressive, because a lot of them went on to do other films with Carpenter. But in that film, you had Donald Pleasence, Adrian Barbeau, Tom Atkins, Frank Doubleday, Kurt Russell, Harry Dean Stanton. Did you know that?
I didn't know. I don't know. See, I have to go back and read. Well, I haven't seen it in so long.
Lee Van Cleef and Ernest Borgnine.
Wow.
So, yeah, that definitely need to watch it again. That would be a good one to do a fresh eyes on. Shortly after that, he went ahead and, in 1982, released one of our favorites, The Thing, which, to me, that movie is...
It's like the perfect movie.
It is.
It's so good.
And we've talked before about one of the things that makes The Thing so great is that it is not a happy ending. Everybody dies.
And that every time you watch it, you see new clues. You see something different that maybe you didn't see before.
And it just
little things, little details hidden in the backgrounds or whatever that are, you just, you know, like new thoughts, like, ooh, is it the whiskey bottle, or the gasoline, or the fire, or the bullets, or the dog, or like, every time I see it, I see something new.
Right. That one had a great cast also, including Keith David, who Keith David, of course, did some other films with Carpenter we're going to get into in a second. And bringing back, once again, Kurt Russell, of course. That is just such an awesome movie. And it holds up so well in every aspect, as mm-hmm. far as the story, the special effects, and everything.
Yeah.
That movie was one of those special effects groundbreaking movies back in the day. You didn't get movies like that. You
know? No.
This was before CGI. They were doing things that people would do with CGI now and making it look very realistic. It
looks more realistic.
Yeah. Definitely.
More disturbing because it's really, really there. So.
Okay. And after The Thing, which at the time was a financial disappointment. It didn't do well, which is odd. You know, now it has just this huge cult following, and it's been, you know, it's held up,
mm-hmm.
you know, such high regards. But at the time, it was not. His next film that he did was the 1983 adaptation of a Stephen King novel called Christine.
Mm-hmm.
Another which is great one.
One of the better adaptations of a Stephen King novel, actually, because it's so true to the book. Overall,
mm-hmm.
and once again, taking an inanimate, you know, it's like Christine is like the Terminator. Christine is like a combination of the Terminator and Michael Myers.
Yeah, it's
a car.
It's Michael Myers on wheels.
It, you know, it's a car. It doesn't have a personality, but it does,
mm-hmm.
and it's unstoppable, and it's. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I got my little Christine car up there. But it was like, she's just beautiful.
After that, in 84, he directed Starman, which is a movie, while it was reviewed favorably, it didn't do really, really all that well in mm-hmm. theaters. I recently watched it. Amy wanted to watch it about a month ago, so I went ahead and got it. Of course, with Jeff Bridges playing an alien that takes over the body of another guy.
Yeah.
And it's a cool movie.
There was a TV series and had Robert Hayes in it for a while. And I watched that when I was a kid as well.
Okay, after that, his next big budget film was, of course, Big Trouble in Little China in 1986, which is one of the quintessential 80s movies. That movie had an incredible cast. The story was just unreal. The special effects, you know, John Carpenter, he knew what he wanted with that vision, brought Kurt Russell back, and that is one of the best movies made in the 80s.
Yeah.
By far. I mean, my kids even love. You know, just, I hate to segue like this again, but I remember I wanted to mention this earlier. What's up with Keanu Reeves? I'm with my daughter the other day, with the kids, we're Father's Day, we're going to Dave and Buster's, and my daughter starts telling me, I hear her say, Keanu Reeves is so hot. And I'm like, that man's too old for you. What are you talking about?
He just kind of came out of nowhere.
He has had the most incredible resurgence, which I'm happy about. I love Keanu Reeves, but it's mystifying how all of a sudden he's a millennial icon.
I have no idea. as long as he's Ted again, that looks cool.
Okay, sorry for that. Okay, after Big Trouble in Little China in 87, he made a low-budget film called Prince of Darkness.
Which was actually really good.
Okay, that one it? I haven't seen, no.
I saw it. I remember it was good.
And then he had the cult classic, which is another one of my favorite movies, They Live, with Keith David and Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper.
That movie was awesome. That's a cool movie. It's another one that holds up because just the conspiracy theories involved in that movie, people still have them today.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, they're all real.
Yeah.
Really.
So that is a very, very good one. 1989, he was offered Exorcist 3 and he turned it down. Decided to go ahead. And 1990s were kind of a decade of his commercial success kind of slipping off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He had a movie, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which I remember, Village of the Damned, which didn't do well.
Yeah, neither one of those were very good.
And Escape from L.A.
Mm-hmm. Which, that wasn't even very good.
No, they had several bad movies. The next one that he had that I kind of love, which didn't do well commercially, but it has a cult following now. I for one, am one of the people that have a cult following for this movie, is In the Mouth of Madness, which he did in 1995.
Oh, certainly. That was great.
It was an homage to Lovecraft. It is a... it is a great movie. You need to watch it a couple times to pick up everything.
Because
it's a mind screw.
it'll mess with your head severely. Yeah.
But it is a good movie. Like I said, I love it. In 1998, he had a movie featuring James Wood called Vampires.
Which is also good.
Yes. But unfortunately, all these movies, when they were first released, weren't looked upon as being good. But like I said, now they have just a cult following. You know, well, we've talked about before how there was a decline in general with horror for a while until Scream came out.
Well, the cool thing about Vampires, what made it, because it was a straightforward vampire, but it wasn't about the vampires, it was about the vampire hunters.
Yeah.
And what they did in Vampires, which was really cool, is they'd go with the vampires sleeping in the daytime, they'd go into their lair and hook chains on them, and then they had a big-ass truck that would, drag them out into the light. And so, there was a lot of really... I mean, it was very violent and had a lot of really cool, scenes like that. And
because I like James Wood.
Yeah, and so that was a good vampire... And so, it's a romp. You know, it's not something that you're going to sit there... It's not like The Thing where you're going to sit there and be like, oh, it's amazing. You know, it's It's not...
It's a fun movie.
Yeah, but it's fun to watch, and I enjoyed it.
Okay. He was considered to do the sequel, Halloween H2O, 20 years later, but he decided to pass on that and let that go another way because he didn't feel as though he could do it well. And in the 2000s, he went into a semi-retirement. He did a couple of movies, Ghost of Mars, he did. And then, of course, in 2007, there was the, I'm not going to say spat, but the... spat that he had with Rob Zombie concerning the remake of Halloween. So he came into the forefront again, just because he definitely did not give Rob Zombie his blessing.
No.
There was an ugly public thing that Rob Zombie, I think, exasperated a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely was disrespectful to Carpenter. I'm sorry, Halloween's Carpenter's baby. You know, if you're going to remake Halloween, you really should have the blessing of the guy that...
made it to begin with.
Yeah. Definitely. Which Danny McBride did get. You know, John Carpenter wanted that to be done by Danny McBride, I think, just to take away... from Rob Zombie's. He wanted people to forget about that one. Mm-hmm. And look at this remake.
The 2018 was really good. The 2018 the 2018 Halloween was awesome. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of fun watching this scary movie that was old formula, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis running from a from a Michael Myers while he killed people, and it was good.
And of course, he was involved with the remake that we just spoke of, and that was kind of like his resurgence to the forefront, where people, you know. Mm-hmm. While he wasn't forgotten by true horror fans, this kind of brought him to the forefront of everybody else. You know, this man's mind. I don't know if you know who Cody Shibby is. Mm-hmm. But Cody Shibby, one of my favorite horror artists currently working. He lives out in Austin, if I'm not mistaken. But him and his brother both do horror art. And I want to order this t-shirt because it's a homage to John Carpenter. He has a shirt in a print you can get right now where it's John Carpenter's face. And there's a huge thought bubble coming up. And in that thought bubble are all the characters from so many movies that he was involved in, from Big Trouble in Little China, from They Live, to The Thing, just everything. The man, if you look at it, you're like, this man was involved in so many movies that I love so much.
Yeah.
You know.
But when you say his name, it's almost, there's like a reverence to it. Like, he's up there. I mean, I would put him, myself, higher than Wes Craven. Wes Craven's like the master of horror, you know, but Carpenter, because Wes Craven had series, you know, like he did the Nightmare series, and he did, you know, Swamp Thing, you know, he did movies, but Carpenter's work, I mean, hasn't done a lot of sequels. I guess Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
is the only real true sequel. Everything else is standalone films. The beginnings of franchises, but not he didn't do the sequels. The man's just a legend in horror. In film anyway, but in horror specifically.
Horror and special effects. Mm-hmm. You got to give the guy his credit. I mean, they talk a little bit about, you know, some of his distinctive techniques, minimalist lighting in photography, static cameras, steady cams, distinctive synthesized scores, which he, most of his scores he composes himself, mm-hmm. which I found rather interesting. Like I told you, over the past few years, I've gotten a new appreciation for sound in films, whether it be scores or anything else. And to think that, you know, the Halloween, he came up with that. Mm-hmm. That's his score. He did the score for the movie Halloween. He's a master at so much. So let's see what, if you could go ahead and someone has never heard of John Carpenter before, what are the first must watches that they need to have?
Jeez, well, for Halloween and The Thing for sure. Period. Mm-hmm. Like, go watch those and come back, and then we'll direct you, and we'll send you in a different direction based on that. Again, Big Trouble and Escape from New York are both, I mean, they're not horror, but they're both just amazing, fun mm-hmm. to watch films. I mean, they're so cool. So
you can easily tell somebody, search John Carpenter and Kurt Russell together in any movie that pops up.
Watch it.
You gotta watch it.
Certainly. But then, wasn't Jamie Lee Curtis in The Fog?
No, that was Adrienne Barbeau.
Adrienne Barbeau?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought she was...
Oh, wait, she was. She was. Yeah. You're right. She was the mom. She was the mom of the boy. Yeah.
So you can do... You can do Sir John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she was. I'm sorry about that. I forgot that she was the mother of the boy.
I mean, Christine is a great, fun, scary movie. I mean... God, where do you tell them to stop?
Right.
I wouldn't go into the 90s too much. Mm-hmm. Invisible Man, that had Chevy Chase in it. Memoirs of Invisible Man.
Yeah, that one wasn't
like, that right. wasn't so great. So, yeah, I can't think of where... I mean, there's so many good ones that right. you can't really... I mean, I would start with Halloween for sure.
What's interesting is... Pretty much all John Carpenter's movies. Halloween, maybe not so much because it's you know, it involves teenagers and certain styles of dress and stuff. Most of the movies hold up today, all mm-hmm. across the board, as far as and probably Escape from New York, because you know that kind of that atypical 80s
leather
herd stuff. But like They Live,
T-shirts and blue jeans.
Yeah, yeah. Big Trouble in Little China holds up so well.
He's not heavy on costuming.
Yeah. Yeah, so John Carpenter. If you don't know about him, find out, because he was a master. He is a master.
And if there's some of these that you haven't seen, because for one reason or another, go check them out. Most of them you can get on Netflix. You can find them in video or video bins at mm-hmm. like Walmart or at Goodwill or whatever. I've got a pretty decent Carpenter collection. Mm-hmm. I've got Christine. I've got Halloween. I've got The Thing, you know, I'm starting to pick up kind of more and more. I want to get Prince of Darkness because that's actually a really good movie.
Okay, I'm going to have to check that out.
It's scary. I mean, Prince of Darkness, it's the devil. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... Don't want to spoil it or anything, but it's good. It's fun. But yeah, let us call that episode 138. And we'll talk to you next week.
Later.
Thank you.